right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Daily Power Parsha. This is March 24th, 2020. We are in the middle of our Corona quarantine, which is not fun, but it's but who says life always has to be fun? We have to be healthy, we have to be safe, take care of ourselves. So that's what we're doing, and that's what we're all about. Okay. So there's a lot to talk about in the Torah reading for today, and hopefully a lot to get inspired about. Once again, hey Charna, good to see you. Once again, I'd like to share my screen so we can go through the Torah reading together. Just to reset the conversation, like I did yesterday, I mentioned that that this week's Torah portion is Vayikra, which is the first portion of the book of Leviticus. By the way, you should know why Leviticus, which sounds very Greek or Roman, doesn't it? Leviticus, Spartacus, right? Whatever. I'm sure you're all totally agreeing with me. Thank you. All right. Yes. Thank you, Sandy. Why Leviticus? Leviticus comes from the word Levi or Levi, which is basically the tribe of Levi, because who were the people that worked in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle? It was the Levites. That was their gig. That's why they got paid the big bucks. So that was their service in the Mishkan, in the temple, in the tabernacle. And these portions are where all of this is discussed, i.e., what should be done, how it should be done with the sacrificial service, etc. So that's a segue. That's an introduction into our conversation today. I'm about to share my screen so that we can all do this together. Okay, here we go. Can you all see that? Yes-ish?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Good stuff. Leviticus chapter 2, verse number 7. This begins reading number 3. If you look at the top, there's first, second, third readings at the top. Oh, at the top, right? This is the third reading. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Tuesday is day number 3.
Everybody's everything. So just unmute it if you have a question. Is that okay?
Yeah. I'm gonna mute everybody.
Okay, thank you.
I'm gonna mute everybody. But yeah, you can totally mute what's it called again?
We can mute ourselves. We can just mute ourselves.
Yes, you can unmute yourself anytime. This is always best practice. You can mute until you want to speak, add, share, ask a question, whatever it is, and then you unmute, and you're good to go. Now,
thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Now, let's jump right in. So, the third reading begins with a discussion about sacrificing, giving a meal offering. Now, what's a meal offering? So, it means a meal offering is like a full meal with your protein and your side. And I'm kidding. No, meal offering is an offering that is comprised of flour, meal as in flour, something that is a, what's it called again? Hold on one second. Okay. There we go. Okay. Yeah. So it's an offering that's made of flour basically made of flour. And the Torah tells us something very, very fascinating that relates to an upcoming holiday, which I will not name yet. And that is, take a look at this verse. Hold on, where is it? It says, here you go, verse number 11. Okay, right in the middle of your screen, verse 11. Look what it says right here. No meal offering that you sacrifice to the Lord shall be made out of anything leavened, for you shall not cause to go up in smoke any leavening or any honey as a fire offering to the Lord. The Torah tells us that when it comes to these flour offerings, don't bring it. Don't bring an offering that has yeast. It says leavening, but it's really yeast, sa'ar in Hebrew. The translation is yeast. There's no yeast, v'chol devash, and no honey. So it, when you bring this meal offering, it just has to be very simple, kind of a Passover friendly. Now, it's not like they were observing Passover the whole year round. The commentaries elaborate what's the problem with the leavening or the honey? What's the issue with the yeast and the honey? Why could they not be brought in offerings in the temple? And here's the short answer. The short answer is because yeast and honey both represent evil. Or, more precisely, the evil inclination in the human being. So famously, when it comes to Passover, there's a teaching that tells us that why is it that on Passover we're meant to only eat matzah, the flat bread, and not any chametz, not any leavened bread, not any leavened bread. And the explanation is, again, this is the theme that we're exploring today, the explanation is because anything made out of yeast, which rises, represents arrogance and haughtiness and the opposite of humility. Yesterday, we spoke about the theme of humility and the small aleph, and we spoke about the large aleph with regards to Adam, and we talked about arrogance and hubris and how that can lead to all sorts of mistakes and errors and miscalculations. And now we have a similar theme when it comes to chametz and matzah. Chametz, which is leavened items, bread, etc., baguettes, it's, right? All of those wonderful baked goods that are not Passover friendly, all of them contain yeast. And since it has yeast, it rises. And what is that? What makes it rise? Hot air. So that's the message. Stay away from the arrogance. Stay away from the hot air. Matzah represents humility. It's flat. Not that it's humiliated, not that it's a shmata that everything steps on. Look at matzah in the store. Especially the handmade matzah. It costs a pretty penny. No one's taking it for granted. So matzah is a wonderful item, but it's flat. Flat represents humility. So when it comes to offering ourselves to God, because of course all of these verses about bringing sacrifice and offerings to God are not just in the literal sense in ancient times when there was a temple, but these are timeless commandments. And so the question is, how do we bring ourselves closer to God, right? The Hebrew word for offering is karban. What is karban? Karban means karov, to come close. How do we bring ourselves closer to God? The answer is simple. It's by not bringing any yeast or any honey. The honey is also a leavening agent. As you know, as you may know if you've done any baking, so yeast thrives. Yeast has to consume, has to eat in order to be active. And so one of the things that we mix with yeast when we make, for example, challah, is either sugar or honey, something sweet. So in this context, again, it's not like honey is, you know, absolutely symbolic of evil, and it's not like yeast is always symbolic of evil. In this context, when it comes to bringing an offering, bringing ourselves closer to God, no yeast and no honey, nothing like that. I saw another commentary. I have my book. I'm going to show you what I study from. This is called Chumash Mikraos Gedolos. This is a book of collected classic commentaries on the Torah, and this is in the original Hebrew language. So you can see on this side, you have three lines of verse, that's the big text, and then around it, all of the other commentaries. All of the commentaries, when I say all, I don't mean all, not all the commentaries, but many commentaries. The classic commentaries are selected, probably a half a dozen to a dozen commentaries on this page. So I saw an interesting commentary that says that honey is compared to the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. Why? Because the evil inclination always tells us about doing things that are sweet, right? That are allegedly sweet. Like, oh, this is so good to do. It'd be so nice. It'd feel so good. Do it. What could go wrong? And we kind of know the answer to that question, what could go wrong? So if something, you know the expression, if the deal seems too good to be true, it usually is. If something seems like overly sweet, it probably is. I once gave an explanation on the iHolidays at our learner service regarding why it says in the Talmud, when it expounds on the opening verse, not the opening verse, on the verse that speaks of the creation of the human being. It says on the sixth day that God saw that it was very good. Not just good, but very good. Every day it says God saw what he had done and it was good. except for Monday, but whatever, but that's another story. But on Friday, on the day that Adam and Eve were created, it says God saw that it was very good. Tov ma'od. Not just tov, good, but tov ma'od, very good. The Talmud says tov means the Yetzer Tov, the good inclination. Tov ma'od, very good, is the Yetzer, the evil inclination. Question is, why is the evil inclination very good? That makes no sense. What kind of commentary is that? The Talmud says, good refers to the good inclination. Very good is the evil inclination. So I saw a beautiful answer. And it relates to this honey business. That when something seems very, very good, no, not just good, but very good, stay away from that. It's probably not good at all. It's like in the olden days, one of the magidim, one of the preachers that used to travel in Russia and Eastern Europe, once gave this parable. He says, you know, back in the day before refrigeration, so if you bought meat from a butcher, and it was very, very spiced, you probably should be wary of that meat. Because why do you think they spiced it a lot? They probably spiced it a lot because it was going bad. So if it's good, it's good. If it's very good, be careful. And so too it is in life. If it's yeast, if it's arrogant, stay away from. If it's honey, if it's very, very sweet, you also might want to stay away from that. So here's the point. These are the ideas. These are the elements that we are not to bring as an offering. I want to mention that for our second thought, and this will be the last thought that I share, today, it's a powerful idea. It's about salt. So yeast and honey do not belong in the offerings to God. But what does? What does is the salt. Take a look at verse 13. And you shall salt, I'm going to read it here, and you shall salt every one of your meal offering sacrifices with salt, and you shall not omit the salt of your God's covenant from being placed upon your meal offerings. You shall offer salt on all your sacrifices. How many times does it say salt in that one verse? It looks like, to me, it looks like four times. Let's see in the Hebrew. Melach, melach, melach. No, three times. Melach, oh, melach timlach. Yeah, four. Four times it says the word salt in that verse. You shall salt every one of your offerings with salt. Don't omit the salt. You shall offer salt. Salt, salt, salt. Marsha, 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 Marsha. An extra one. Because we have four. So clearly, right, honey is no good, yeast is no good, but salt is good. But here's the clue as to why salt should be included. It calls salt the salt of your God's covenant. What's the covenant? So our sages tell us something absolutely fascinating. That when God created the worlds, we're going back to the story of creation that I mentioned a moment ago. When it came to the second day of creation, on Monday, the first Monday, God, when it, as I mentioned before, it doesn't say that it was good that day. What happened on that Monday? What happened on the second day of creation? It says God divided the upper waters and the lower waters. God basically moved some waters below and some waters above. Whatever that means in the atmosphere, whatever that is. Lower waters and upper waters. Continues the Midrash and the Talmud to tell us that the lower waters complained to God. And the lower waters said, why do we deserve to be banished in a physical environment or in a lowly environment? The upper waters, we were right there, we were all together. And now you've divided. The upper waters are closer to you and we're the lower waters. So God says, don't worry. I hear your complaint. I'm going to throw you a bone. Well, maybe I'm just paraphrasing. Right? God says, I'm going to give you a place to connect with me. And where is that? Your derivative, you waters, derivative, the ocean, the salt, right, is going to be an integral part of the daily service in the temple. So far be it from you not having any space in the realm of holiness. No, you will actually have your opportunity to connect with me and to be part of the service. And that's why the offerings were brought with salt. Again, it wasn't the ocean or seawater, but it's the salt that comes from the ocean and the sea. It's the salt that derives from that that's brought on the altar together with the meal offerings. In fact, it wasn't only on the meal offerings. It was also on the meat offerings. Any offering that was brought in general and all the offerings, which is what the last half of that verse, the last clause of verse 13 says, you shall offer salt on all your sacrifices, not just the meal offerings that we're speaking about in this context, but any offering. There was always salt brought. Why? Because it was a compensation for the lower waters that were separated and banished below. I need to tell you also that this is why on our tables, every time we sit down for a meal, and we have bread, which according to Jewish law makes it, because bread is such a staple, that's what makes it a meal. So every time we have a meal with bread, we are encouraged in Jewish law to always have salt on our tables, and to, after we say the blessing over the bread, we dip the bread in salt, and then we eat the piece of bread. Why? Because today our tables are like the altar of old. Just like the altar in the temple was a place in which elements were uplifted, where the natural world, whether it's an animal or a vegetable or whatever, is uplifted. So that's where things became uplifted. So to our tables, when we eat, that's how and when we also elevate the world around us in that experience, i.e. eating for the sake of heaven. And therefore, we also have salt on our tables. I'll also mention one more insight that I saw in the commentaries, and that is that with the presence of salt, we had all four dynamics of existence involved in the sacrificial service. You had a human being bringing the offering. Sometimes you had animals being brought as offerings. You had the meal offering, which is made of vegetation, and then you had the salt, which comes from, which is inanimate life. So here are the four classifications of life, starting from below to above: domeim, inanimate life; tzomeach, vegetation; chai, animal life; and medaber, human life. So all four were contained in this. And that means when a person brought a sacrifice, they were helping lift up the entire, all the strata, if you will, of creation from the bottom up. As we know, when you want to lift something, you have to start from the bottom and then lift everything up. If you start halfway, you're only going to get half of it. Like my famous example of seven-layer cake. If you grab the seven-layer cake from the middle, you know what's going to happen? You're going to get three or four layers. And who really wants three or four layer cake? If you're going seven layer cake, you go all the way. Are you with me? Yes? Who? Right? Either go big or go home. So that's it. No one wants to go home. So that's it. You got to go for all seven layers. So you go from the bottom, and when you scoop it from the bottom, you get everything. Again, you can use a fork also. It's fine. I'm using the hand as that's all I have with me right now. All these guys. So
it's a recipe of the week.
Recipe seven layer cake. You know what? I've never made seven layer cake, but actually, you know what? Maybe before we sign out today, I need ideas for Thursday night. There were a few that came up, cooking with Rabbi Ari. I need some more ideas. So I'll let you chime in, but let me just close out this idea. So what's the point? A few messages here. Number one, God always keeps a promise. So God says to the lower waters, I'll take care of you. And we have the salt on the offerings. Number two, our tables. Our dinner table, our kitchen table, when we eat, it's as holy as the temple. It's like we're bringing an offering to God. We don't have a temple, but we have a table. We don't have an altar. We have, we have a dinner table. So we can elevate the world and elevate our food to God. It's a very holy experience. We should have the salt. The salt is very powerful. The salt is a preservative. It reminds us of God's eternal promises. Many, many different beautiful themes of salt. The point is no yeast, no sugar, but yes to the salt. Make sense? And we too should be committed in all that we do to elevate things around us and to remain steadfast, keep our commitments like that salt, salt of the earth that's very firm, very strong, and unwavering. Okay, so that closes it out formally for our Torah conversation. In addition to the Torah conversation, like I said before, let me take some feedback because we're talking about food right now. So let's get some ideas about Thursday night cooking with Rabbi Ari. What do you guys think?